Welcome to a special edition of MGO Radio, a supplemental selection Sunday, caused in part by the fact there's a hockey game at 8:30, and we had no idea when we were going to fit in a podcast that
Rush
would be
job.
Timely. So Ace was like, why don't we do it live? And here we are.
Yeah, we'll
so
do
the
it after.
The championship is still underway, but we thought we would talk about the two games Michigan actually got in this tournament before the selection special starts. So starting with the most recent chronological one, the loss to Ohio State, a one-point game.
Wait, can I talk about something even greater than that first?
I know Seth wants to shove something in here.
And
you should let him.
All right, Seth, go ahead.
Thank you to Underground Printing for making this all possible. Check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear at their 3 store locations in Ann Arbor, or learn about their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. Let's not forget our associate sponsors, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residency in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentlemen Coders, and Homeshore Lending, who is once again sponsoring all of MGO Blog's tournament coverage this year. Now you can go.
All right, so Michigan has the ball down one against Ohio State very late, and they hold it in a –
I was okay with the holding it initially.
No.
It was the continuing to hold it I did not like.
Well, so you're in a situation where you're down one, and in that situation, the ability to foul after a miss is pretty valuable, right? Because if you put a 75% free throw shooter on the line, that's a 50-50 shot that you're down two again with the ball. And then even if they make both, like that down three scenario isn't very valuable because they can foul, and whatever three you get up isn't going to be very good. But still, so you have to think about that. You have to think about, like, okay, if you get a bucket, how much time is left? Does Ohio State get, like, a real chance to run offense before jacking something up? Probably not if you start with 20 seconds left, right? Like,
well, that's about – I wanted them to start with 15 or 20 seconds left.
Well, so that's – I mean
– Well, that's about – I wanted them to start with 15 or 20 seconds left.
Well, so that's – I mean
– And they started with, like,
that.
Eight.
Right, and so you don't really get the opportunity to dump it down to Hunter Dickinson, who's the only player on your team who's shot well, right? Except for Austin Davis. Like, he's the only guy who's made buckets. He's got a big post mismatch situation. So they switch, but, you know, Mike Smith has to take a step back jumper because they don't have enough time to exploit the switch.
He does get a clean look.
Yeah, a clean look, but a clean look off a step back. You know, it's a decent look, but it's not – like, what's the shot that goes in, like, maximally, like 40%? And if you went 10 seconds earlier, I feel a lot better about them switching and then you dumping it to Dickinson. Because then you either get Dickinson shooting or someone spotting up.
Well, and this is
a
hot take.
I mean,
sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, you get Dickinson, you know, in the midst of such a dominant game. And, you know, obviously, not only with the threat of by dumping it down to him, do you get the threat of, you know, Dickinson just putting the ball in the basket and giving him the lead, but also the odds that Ohio State is going to have to double team him are pretty high, and you have a pretty good likelihood of Dickinson being able to kick it back out and getting as good a look as Smith got or better, but, you know, on a catch and shoot instead of a step back. So I don't mind the game, like the on-the-fly game theory, like not picking up that you'd maybe want to miss and foul, that would be on the table when that's a play happening on the fly that quickly, especially with Juwan Howard coming from the NBA where the shot clock's 24 seconds and the math's a little different. You know, he's still making those adjustments a little bit in terms of facing these end-of-game situations since Michigan hasn't been in a lot of close games, to be honest. Yeah, I would like to see them go at like 15 or 20 just to get that, to put a couple different things on the board instead of really just having the Smith shot be a one and done.
Yeah, and then the rest of the story is Michigan outside of the post shoots absolutely terribly. So Austin Davis and Hunter Dickinson go 12 of 18 from the floor. Eli Brooks and Mike Smith have a total of, Eli Brooks has two makes from two, and the rest of the team goes 0-for, which is just...
It's,
I mean,
not good.
That's penetrating analysis.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
And then, of course, you have a three-point shooting gap where they shoot 12 of 22. Michigan shoots 6 of 19. That's a 23-point gap on looks that, you know, it wasn't like
I
the first
Ohio
game.
I thought State got better looks.
Maybe they got better looks, but they didn't get a 23-point gap worth of better looks, right?
Like, probably not. No.
They're going under screens, and Mike Smith and Franz Wagner just, I mean, those are technically off the dribble, but they can just settle and shoot.
And Wagner did hit a couple. I mean, he hits two and then misses a few, where it was like, oh, man, like, thought maybe one or two more could have gone out of that.
Right, and Dwayne Washington is, I mean, this is what he's able to do, right? He's able to pull up off the dribble and hit a fair number of them, and he hits 5 of 10 like he did in the previous game. You know, he's not, I mean, he's a 34% shooter for a reason, right? Like, I didn't think his looks in this game were much different from the average Dwayne Washington looks. And, like, that's obviously something within his capabilities, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he shot about one more than what you'd expect him to make.
And, well, that would have been enough.
Yeah, it would have been. And, you know, they leave EJ Liddell just wide the heck open on a couple of inbounds plays from the same spot. But, yeah, I mean, Justice Suing going 2 for 2 is something that jumps out when you lose by one. You know, Seth Towns burying one that's pretty contested. Yeah, I mean, you hope the opponent doesn't shoot 55% from three on the day where you're also a little bit off the mark. That's for sure.
There were ways that Michigan could have won this game that involved Ohio State shooting like this. But, you know, the combination of Michigan not shooting well and Ohio State being lights out from three while also just struggling badly inside the arc, particularly Liddell, who I don't think that's a fluke. I don't think Liddell going 2 of 10 is a fluke because, you know, he got eaten up by Hunter Dickinson inside the arc in the first game too, right? So you know, you have a couple of, and then like Zed Key goes 2 of 5. Like, I feel like that wasn't too far off. And then Michigan's able to stick in the game for a couple of reasons. One, Brandon Johns gets to the free throw line 8 times.
Yep.
And just sort of in general, they get 23 free throws when they knock down 21. And they have a total of 2 turnovers.
Yeah, they just kind of found a way to hang on at the margins, I guess, of this one for as long as possible. Because it really, really didn't feel like for periods of time that they should be in this, especially towards the end of the game when, you know,
when Franz down, like, goes out.
Yeah, and Franz Wagner fouls out, and you're like, well, that's it. And at some point after that, that, you know, the lead just disappears. And I mean, you get some remarkable play largely from Hunter Dickinson, a couple key shots from Brooks, and Shondi Brown finally hits one in this game. he had kind of a rough go. And I mean, hate to say it, but this was a game where they really could have used Isaiah Livers.
Right? I mean, it just feels like maybe the script for a tournament exit, unfortunately, where they're in a tight game and, you know, having their best or second best player, maybe third best, one of their trio of like top end players unavailable kind of feels like the difference. But we mentioned Franz Wagner fouling out. We didn't mention he had a monster defensive game.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. 3 block shots, including a blocked 3 where he came from, I think, just outside the restricted circle. A couple of steals, a ton of deflections, just showing his defensive player of the year chops despite not being on the all-defense team.
So-called defensive player of the year decided to talk trash on Twitter afterwards, and Hunter Dickinson made the defensive play of the day on Twitter there. By posting video of Mike Smith from a game that we will talk about in the next segment. I mean, Wagner, that he was left off first team all defense is just criminal. This his performance in this game showed it. I mean, even with the foul out, he's dominant on that end in ways that wings have a really, really hard time doing. And it is getting very hard to talk through a 1-point Big Ten change. Everybody else on the screen starts looking away.
We're on video, too, so people can see how often we're kind of looking up to the side.
Everybody can see how distracted people are. This is great.
Do you want me to pick it up now?
We should talk about. You want to go with what I was going with?
No, I was going to talk about.
I lost my train of thought now. I'm done.
Let's talk about Brandon Johns. So Brandon Johns gets 24 minutes here. Doesn't hit a shot from the floor, but as mentioned, goes to the line 8 times, makes 7 of those. 3 offensive rebounds, 5 defensive rebounds, 2 assists, 1 turnover. Like, we talked about not having livers around, and I do think that was a factor in the loss. But Johns, I think, if he can maintain that level of performance, mitigates at least part of the drop-off we thought we were going to get. Like, you know, that open look from three he took didn't go down, but, like, he's shooting fairly well in the season. My main problem with him is he's too willing to pass up those shots. But, yeah, he was working it in the post, and that's something that we haven't seen from that particular position, the four, because, I mean, at least not in the way that Johns was going in the post, right? Livers will take that fadeaway, which he's pretty good with, but Brandon Johns was getting to the bucket, drawing contact, and being really active. And I feel like that's a possibility for him in the tournament. I also feel like one of those very anonymous Brandon Johns games where he almost gets a trillion in a bunch of minutes is also possible. Like, he is really the X factor now, because you can get almost anything from him and it wouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah. And I mean, those aggressive post-ups that, you know, depending on the matchup, I really like, and this was a great matchup for them, especially when Ohio State only had one, I don't even want to call them true bigs in the game, but one kind of big in the game. So I mean, and they zoned up a decent amount, and Johns was, you know, against either man or zone, often able to find kind of the right time to pick a spot and attack. And when he's playing under control, and that's always a win with Brandon Johns a little bit, you know, he shows those flashes of skill, and I'm hoping that, you know, in this game, he plays 24 minutes and looks a lot more comfortable out there. And his defense, you know, I think he was a pretty big part of Ohio State only shooting 34% on two-pointers. You know, I think he's a really strong defender, especially when he's able to play next to Dickinson, which he wasn't able to do a lot leading up to this point. And his defense can help mitigate some of the issues you get when Austin Davis is playing at center, which helps somewhat since you're going to have to use those minutes from Davis probably right now with Livers out, because Johns is just needed at the four in the way that he wasn't before. Yep. So I thought this was a pretty promising performance for him, considering he didn't hit a shot from the field. He was aggressive without, you know, gacking the ball up a lot, and he was generally in the right place on defense. There was one kind of
there was one, yeah.
With Austin Davis that yeah, got that posted on Twitter, and that I had in my notes even before that went up. But you know, who knows who the communication issue was on there? And they did fix it, and they did get a stop on that possession.
That's right. That's right. It didn't affect the final score.
Results based grading on that play. We'll go with that.
I suppose so. So, I mean, you know, again, I think we've kind of come to earth right here, right? So Michigan was just demolishing teams. And even when the opposition was hot, like the first Maryland game, the Ohio State game, even when they were shooting, Michigan was able to outpace teams. And it kind of feels like they've come back to earth, especially with the Livers injury. And now they're still a very good team. But like, I'm not like before, I'm like, all right, if we don't get to the Final Four, that's a little bit of a disappointment. And now I'm just like, I mean, this is not the second best team in the nation probably without Livers, right? It's going to be somewhere in the top 10, but that's when you kind of get into the second weekend and you're vulnerable.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I mean, it definitely cuts the margin.
There are ways to build, there are ways to do things a little differently with Johns, like especially if he can draw fouls the way he's been able. You know, Ohio State's bigs are not going to be the same bigs that you face all throughout the tournament, but he does have that ability to kind of out-athlete people and pick up fouls at the rim, which could open up like a whole new bully ball style of play, because you got Dickinson down there too. You can cause a lot of fouls on their bigs.
That is a thing, like Dickinson getting out of the Big Ten and being loosed upon the wider world of college basketball might feel like a bit of a revelation, right? Like early season Dickinson.
And even Austin Davis too. I mean, getting him against, you know, guys who aren't just able to destroy him in every way when he's on defense is going to be real nice for him for a little bit.
Yeah, like, you know, a plucky mid-major, like, honestly, like, you look at the KenPom rankings of, like, a Loyola Chicago, and you're like, ooh, they'd be bad on the 8-9 line. And I'm like, no. Like, I'm sorry, but Cameron Krutwig is just going to get annihilated by Hunter Dickinson. And
I think so. I still would prefer not to see Loyola Chicago.
Sure. I mean, like,
because of the potential teams, they seem like, you know.
But, like, you know, you look at various teams that are on the 8-9 line, and you look at, okay, what are they going to do with the center matchup? And the answer for most of them is double or die. So that makes me feel better about getting to the second weekend. And then who knows, like this stress injury for Livers is pretty, like nobody really knows what's going on with it. And he thinks that, you know, he might be able to get back. And so if he can get back, he can get back.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Davis was able to come back from a stress injury in a few weeks earlier this season. So, you know, maybe
was that a stress injury? That was, I thought that was plantar fasciitis.
Well, that's
like, I think he tore
That's a stress injury, depending on how you define it. So, I mean, you know, the team is not being very
forthcoming.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. So I don't know. Maybe if you do manage to reach that Final Four weekend, maybe Livers is able to come back for that, and you get kind of a Willis Reed situation going there. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. You know, none of us were expecting Eli Brooks to come back and miss no tournament games.
Yeah,
that's for sure. So,
all right. Well, why don't we take a break, come back, and talk briefly about the Maryland game before the selection show gets underway in earnest.
. 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Back to a supplemental edition of MGO Radio for the MGO Blog Selection Show. That's not what we're selecting. The NCAA Tournament Selection Show, which should be getting underway shortly. We have one other game to address, which is the Maryland game immediately preceding the Ohio State game. Notable for a Juwan Howard ejection and Daryl Morsell being very upset about everything.
He did a lot of talking, but not as much defending.
No. So this was a game where Mike Smith absolutely went off, scoring 18 points with 15 assists and no turnovers. And Morcell himself actually has a really good game for him offensively. Goes 7 of 8 from the floor. 5 turnovers is a bit of a problem. But, you know, they come out of the locker room in the second half and they're like, we're going to stick Morcell on Smith, and it just doesn't matter. Which, unfortunate that Smith followed that up by not making a two in the next game. But he did have 4 assists and 0 turnovers against Ohio State, so it kind of feels like maybe we're moving past the point where Smith is a guy who, you know, offsets a lot of positives with the fact that he turns the ball over a bunch.
Well, I took the banana off.
Yeah, I mean, he's now, I would like to say that I vouch for that very strongly against your wishes. He has 2 turnovers combined in the last 4 games and a lot more assists than that.
And this is like a pattern that goes back about 10 or 12 games now, where there's a notable decrease in his turnover rate about halfway through the Big Ten season that he's amped up in the 2 postseason games.
Yeah, he's really only had 1 like badly elevated turnover game since mid-January. And that was against Indiana in a game where Michigan was kind of cruising a little bit. And he was also getting his offense a lot in that game. So he might have been feeling himself a little bit too much there. But he really seems to have found the right balance of running the pick and roll with Dickinson, looking for his own shot, starting to hunt his 3-pointer more aggressively, and also setting up his teammates in a way where he's finding the baseline a lot in ways where teams still have to both respect the drop off to the big man and the kick out. And with the way he's drawing in the defense, he's liable to pop up for 15 assists because he's getting a step on that first guy with such consistency that you have to bend your defense towards him. And that gets everything going. He's really been playing well.
Well, I thought it was nice to see him. Sorry, Brian. I thought it was nice to see him.
This game has,
yeah. Okay. I'll go. This happens when we're recording, by the way, but we're usually not live. It was nice to see him come back from the Illinois game where they were kind of flashing at him with taller guards and trying to make life difficult on him. And, you know, Maryland had some of those kind of athletes as well, and he was much better prepared for that.
Look, this game has the kerfuffle kind of in the middle of the second half where they go to commercial and all of a sudden Twitter's talking about how Juwan Howard's been ejected. And then you get like back to the actual video of the incident and you're like, is that all? And I've done a little lip reading, and I think that Turgeon was telling the truth when he said, I said, don't talk to me. Don't ever talk to me, which just is just, why would you say that you said that to somebody? It's it's not good. It's bad.
Yeah. And there's, you know, I mean, you don't necessarily want to bring this up because it's not really going to come to it. But like, if that same situation happened and there were not people there to get in between Mark Turgeon and Juwan Howard, would he be saying the same thing? I say no.
I mean,
Juwan maybe Howard, he is that disrespectful. Maybe he's just that much of a jackass. But like, and you're like, trying to be as some self-preservation instincts.
You're trying to figure out like what is going on here, and I think it really goes back to the Daryl Morcell broken bone incident where Franz elbows him and caves in the side of his face, because Morcell is chirping this whole time. There's like an incident later in the game where he like gives Dickinson an elbow and Sean D's like, where's the tech? So I just feel like, and then you have the like Dickinson earlier in the year just mean mugging their bench after every bucket.
Yeah, I mean, I think this, you've got kind of a long building of things between the like Dickinson perceived recruiting slight with DeMatha, you know, going back forever at Maryland. I mean, that is weird. And Morcell is also a dude. I mean, if you watch Maryland's other games, he talks a lot in those too. Like, yeah. This is not just a Michigan thing. So it's not a huge surprise to see him involved, especially since this did get a little personal since he got a dent in his head. Even though that was a basketball play, I do understand why that would be upsetting. So, I mean, But at the same time, it is funny that it's this team that Michigan just, you know, like hammered three times. And it's like, all right, like you guys had two good halves. Like, can you chill out?
It is very strange that they're hyped up. So Maryland is bringing in two guys next year so far. They're ranked 82nd and 100th. So I feel like, and neither of them is, like, one of the guys is 6'9". So if they want to, like, step to Michigan and, like, be a rival, they're going to have to get someone taller than 6'9 on their whole roster, right?
Like, who's not named Sticks? I mean, at this point, they would also take Sticks. That would be very nice for them.
Oh, I mean, yeah, he was a good player. And...
I mean, could plausibly guard centers. That would be nice for them. Yeah, I mean, they built a team that's kind of interesting and has some big holes.
The roster construction is the most baffling I can remember.
Everybody's the same size, just different widths.
So Michigan shoots fairly well from three, especially if you chalk Isaiah Livers going 0-for-4 up for the fact that he had to remove himself from the game after 15 minutes. So, you know, three-point variation is often a withering issue in college basketball. And, you know, the kind of alarming thing is that Michigan played butt defense for what, a solid 12 to 15-minute period here?
Yeah, there was an unfortunate stretch where, I mean, you know, Maryland does give Michigan some trouble when they're playing drop coverage because most of their centers, you know, if they're playing Dante Scott as the small ball five or Jarius Hamilton out there, you know, their center can legitimately step out and shoot threes. So, I mean, Hamilton goes into the corner a bunch against Michigan, which you rarely see a center just firing corner threes.
All right. Well, so the selection, Joe, has just started, and they have pictures of guys from Gonzaga, Baylor, Illinois, and Michigan in the background.
Huh.
So there you go. There's your one seed, folks.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break now, come back, and actually talk about the selection show.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do
have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
All right, so the selection show just went right into the West bracket, which is Gonzaga's bracket. And two things. We have the first upset in that they didn't put Appalachian State in our brackets.
Hooray!
And Virginia seems like a pretty rough four for a team like Gonzaga that just wants to get up and down. Virginia is very deliberate and very good at being deliberate. So also not drawing Kansas as a three is pretty good. USC is a six. They have Evan Mobley. They're pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. So. They have Iowa as their two, though. That's going to be a fun one.
I mean, that's weird. Why would they put Iowa in the same bracket as a team they already played this year?
That is interesting. Yeah.
And we saw that game, and it just didn't feel like Iowa had any chance of stopping them. I mean, the only thing you can say about it is that Iowa's defense has been on an upward swing. They're up to 50th in KenPom now, which is, I think, the high watermark for the Fran era, perhaps. Let's go find out.
I'm not clicking through every single Iowa team again, Brian. I've done that too many times for you.
They were 30th in 2016. So they're getting towards the very top. Oh, we're going to get to see Rutgers selected. How about that?
Hey.
So the West bracket's up. Virginia, USC, Iowa. I mean, Iowa was always going to be in not Michigan's region, right? So
and probably not Illinois either.
Right. So it was really whether Iowa got Baylor or Gonzaga, they got Gonzaga.
Still weird that they didn't give them to Baylor, considering I would say Iowa is probably also the toughest two seed.
It's probably pretty tight.
They got a real tough draw in Virginia. At the four, I actually think Kansas is like potentially one of the weaker threes. I don't. This is a pretty down year for them. They weren't even very competitive in the Big 12.
No.
And they just don't have the like talent that pops off like you normally. That you know, Jalen Wilson, who Michigan fans might remember as a one-time commit, is kind of the top guy at a pretty egalitarian offense and isn't like a budding lottery pick at this point or anything.
No, and their highest usage guy is David McCormack, who's a center shooting 50% from two. And, you know, if you just watch him play, like, they've often been better with him off the floor, but they don't really have a lot of options other than him. So, yeah, getting them as the two is – I mean, that them as the three is probably good news for Iowa, right? Like,
yeah, because they're kind of inverse. Kansas is sort of inverse Iowa, where but not as – good, where they have the number six defense in the country, but the number 59 offense. So I think if you're Iowa, you can feel pretty good about your chances of just outscoring Kansas because they just are much better at shooting. And so even if Kansas is a significantly better team athletically, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep up. But Iowa's chances of reaching the Final Four probably hinge on Gonzaga losing early.
Also, this region has both of the major conference teams that removed themselves from the conference tournament, Virginia and Kansas.
That's right.
So if they're not able to go, what's going to happen is that some standby team is going to get sucked into that region. And the standby team did make the tournament in the first place, but they're not going to re-bracket, right? So this could be a spot where you get some pretty weird matchups if either one of these teams is not able to go.
I wonder if that's why they ended up in Gonzaga's region, was to reward the one seed with the potential dislike. Oh, you got a real easy path. Duke as a three seed.
I don't know. Virginia, average possession length is 346 in the country. average defensive possession length is 344th. That is exactly the opposite thing I want to see in a potential Sweet 16 matchup if I'm supposed to be the best team in the country, right? Because if you're the best team in the country, you want as many trials as possible to demonstrate that. And Virginia is going to slow you down, and they're good enough. I mean, they shoot really well from three, which is going to be a dangerous situation for them. Virginia is not a team you want to see.
Virginia themselves has shown why you don't want to be Virginia or play a Virginia type team in the opening round. Slow games are wild. They're random.
Yes. So we're just getting into the South region now, which is Baylor's region. So we're just going to be looking for who the twos and fours are, where the Big Ten teams are.
And of course, we're all seeing these pop up at different times because we're on different.
Right. I'm a good bit ahead of you guys, but I think by now you can see Wisconsin got North Carolina, which is.
Nope, we couldn't. So,
sorry. Thanks. Sorry, everybody. Sorry. I'm going to ruin this all day.
That's not allowed to talk for the rest of the segment. We keep going through this.
So North Carolina is actually a team I really wanted to see on Michigan's 8-9 line because they play two bigs at all points and their highest usage guy can't shoot at all. And what I don't want to, how does Michigan get out of this tournament? Well, you have guards who can shoot threes over Michigan's smaller guards.
That is, however, a great draw for Wisconsin because they can't stretch them. But then a brutal draw for Wisconsin to have dropped all the way to a freaking 9 seed.
I mean, they deserve
so they're going to have to play. I mean, they did. They had a bad close of the season. But if I'm Baylor, I'm not loving the possibility of facing Wisconsin in the second round.
No, but I think a Purdue matchup is pretty comfortable for them as the four.
Yes, and Villanova is a week five because Colin Gillespie is out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that looks like a free pass to the Elite Eight to me. I mean, the only thing about Baylor is that Baylor has been playing so much worse after their COVID pause. So they're something like 50-something on defense, I think, if you do a Torvik slice since that. And they've been really struggling, even against like teams kind of toward. Then they almost lose to Iowa State.
Yes, and they're a team that also relies heavily on their very good 3-point shooting. So if you have a rough night, that might be curtains for them, especially if they're defense. Because the main thing that was keeping them, in them and Gonzaga territory earlier was just having an elite defense.
Yeah, Arkansas as a three is fairly dangerous. Of course, Michigan knows that Moses Moody is there. He's probably headed towards being a mid-first-round pick in the draft. They have a lot of size. They're an excellent shooting team, I think. Let me double-check that.
They are a pretty good shooting team.
Pretty
Not
good
a
shooting
great three-point shooting team, but a good scoring all around.
Colin Castleton in Florida gets a 7. Could have used Colin Castleton this year.
You're the only one who calls them Colin Castleton in Florida.
I call him Colin Castleton in Florida. Colin Castleton is shooting. What is he shooting? 59% from the floor.
He's only taken one three this year, which I'm surprised that didn't come around.
Top 50 block rate. Ohio State Baylor. How do we feel about that? That's going to be a lot of threes because those are both five out teams that can really stretch at all five positions. So it's going to be a lot of threes, a lot of drives with bucket. I don't know if Ohio State has the athleticism to stay in front of a team that stretches you out like that.
Yeah, that could be a dangerous matchup for them. They're going to need Dwayne Washington and EJ Liddell in that game real bad, I think. And maybe for Justin Ahrens to wake up and hit some threes.
Well, I mean, the thing about Baylor is that they have so much shooting. And, like, is Ohio State going to be able to meaningfully contest? Because they have, Matthew Mayer is a 42% shooter at 6'9". Like, they really put a lot of pressure on you just because if you give them a gap, they are going to get a shot up, and it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, and they don't lack for athleticism either. But we will see. I mean, you could see a situation much like, in the Michigan matchups, Baylor runs out a pretty small backcourt, and that actually runs all the way up through the three, sometimes up all the way through the five sometimes. They can play pretty small, and their backcourt is 6'2 and 6'3. So Washington might be able to rise up and hit shots over those guys, and maybe that, if they get a blow-up game from him, is a key to victory.
Well, I mean, against Michigan, he's playing Eli Brooks, who's 6', right? So that means he's 5'11". So I think a guy closer to his size. Also, those guys are super athletic. Like,
that's true. And Baylor will be able to switch, you know.
Yeah, they'll be able to switch one to
four. They don't drop like Michigan does as much because, I mean, they'll play Mark Vital at center, and that dude is just a 6'5 brick house. he's a weird player. Got some JaSon Tate, but at the five vibes. Yeah, if he's out there, they'll definitely be switching everything.
I mean, I like Ohio State's chances to get there, to get to the Baylor game. I definitely like Baylor in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you got a three who's ranked 18th on KenPom, like Arkansas. Like, you know, it depends on whether you want to look at Arkansas's whole season, because they started off 2-4 in SEC play, but they didn't lose an SEC game the rest of the way. They had the Big 12 SEC Challenge, lost to Oklahoma State, which looks a lot better now, of course, because Oklahoma State has been playing out of its mind. So, you know, the kind of scuffling at the beginning of the season where they're not doing great against Oral Roberts and Abilene Christian and stuff. All right, maybe that's one version of Arkansas, but they're one of the hottest teams in the country.
I mean, they lost to LSU, who was one of the teams that I was hoping to see on our 8-9 line, so.
Yeah, I mean, they did lose a game in the conference tournament, that is true, but they've been flying up. So, you know, on January 20th, they were 43rd in KenPom, and they're up to 18 now. So they are motoring up. So that's like, do you believe in this team is hot now, or do you believe in their overall resume? We're hoping overall resume for obvious reasons.
Yeah, which is historically, I think, what holds up statistically, although it changes a little bit if you suffer late season injuries, I believe.
Yeah.
All right. The key here is we're going to want to see UConn come off the board in the Illinois region. That's my hope, because if they're on the 8-9 line, I do not want to see them.
I hate that I'm ahead of you guys right now.
Well, maybe don't mention it then.
No, I'm not mentioning. I'm not saying what it was. I'm just saying that I hate that.
We said no talking.
Drexel is 12-7.
Wow. That's an awesome record to have heading into the tournament. I love it.
Drexel. They're in Philadelphia, aren't they?
I just assume teams that I don't know where they are. I just are in Philadelphia.
All right. Illinois draws Loyola. So that's,
there it is.
That's one bullet dodged.
Top 10 KenPom team off the board, not in our region. Although
Put them against UConn.
Georgia Tech got a 9?
They won their conference tournament, but they weren't very good. Like, all right. So I guess we're getting UConn probably. So that's a bit of a bummer.
They might be on the mid-range.
Illinois is going to have to play Loyola Chicago, and Krutwig is going to be an interesting matchup for Coburn's going to eat Cameron Krutwig for breakfast. I take it back.
That's terrible.
Yeah, congrats to Illinois on their Sweet 16
Oklahoma
appearance.
State, though. Ooh.
I would not want to catch Cade Cunningham. That's a hard play. You never know. I mean, that could be like a Carmelo Anthony leading Syracuse type of run with that dude. He is really, really good. So not having them as the four in our region is something I will happily accept. And also seeing them beat Liberty is something I'm totally okay with.
Okay, Bill Walton.
Hey, it's not just Bill Walton.
Oh, it's not just Bill Walton, but Bill Walton brings it up like every time.
That's true. But what does it? State's kind of a tough six.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're still playing that weird like zone, aren't they?
I can't say I've watched much NWC basketball this season.
Syracuse, why are you here?
Always as an 11, forever.
11 seed Syracuse.
As like a dubious 11.
I did have notes on
playing game, too.
I did have some notes on San Diego State. They haven't lost a game since like that back-to-back against Utah State. One of those weird games where they played the same team twice and then the second game was complete reverse of the first one. San Diego State.
Utah's an 11, so.
Yeah.
They lost both of those.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of a different one of those double series. But, yeah. Anyway, that was back in January, so they've been pretty hot. So, I had them as like one of the potential 7 seeds or 6 seeds, or 8 seeds.
West Virginia as a 3 is a break for Illinois, I think.
Is it? I watched them play, and it's like,
they've lost 3 of the last 4. I mean, they were tight against Oklahoma State and Baylor, but
Rutgers, there they are. Clemson.
18-9. It's just not a shiny record for a 3-seed. They will play tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a team that can turn you over a lot. So
yeah. Oh,
so we are getting Alabama because Houston just popped up as the 2 for Illinois. Man bun is gone.
I'm okay with getting Bama instead of Houston.
I mean,
Bama's real 3-point reliant, and their offense is outside of the top 10 in KenPom.
Yes, but they do D up, so they are. Nate Oates is just like, he's got his style, right? He's going to play super fast. He's going to jack up 3-pointers and get to the rim, and anything else is garbage.
But I think Juwan Howard's pretty good when he knows a coach has a certain style, and he can prepare for that.
So interestingly enough, the 4-1 seeds are 1 through 4 on KenPom. The 4-2 seeds are 5 through 8. So I don't know the last time that's happened. Alabama is 8. So if you're going by in the world of KenPom, this is the best.
We're living good.
2 to give up. And there's actually a big gap. So, you know, Iowa and Houston are plus 30. Ohio State and Alabama are plus 26. So that's a pretty significant gap. And, you know, how much you believe that versus, like, I'd rather have a major conference opponent than Houston, which has played in the AAC all year and doesn't really have much strength of schedule. I can feel it. Like, I feel like Gonzaga's overrated.
The SEC, how major are we talking here?
They were solid.
They're okay. But when you watch SEC basketball, it's like the quality of this just isn't quite there.
Excuse me. We call them Colin Castles from the SEC, all right?
I was about to say, like, how many Big Ten people are going to pick that Rutgers-Clemson upset? Because I'm probably going to do it without thinking.
Well, I mean, it depends. Again, we're talking about overall resume versus how you've done lately. And, of course, Clemson started off super hot, and then fell off pretty hard. So
Rutgers also is just 9 spots in front of them on KenPom. Like, they're just going to be a favorite as the 10th seed.
Guess who's right in front of Rutgers? Duke.
Okay, so some weird things happen when you play really difficult schedules in non-conference. I don't have much else to say.
So Michigan State's going to be in our bracket then, right? They're not up here yet.
If they make it.
I mean, Syracuse got in. Were they? I don't know.
There's no way that they're not in. Yeah, they're going to be like the 11 or 12 in our bracket.
Let's just hope for not that.
Or Virginia's alternate against Gonzaga early on.
That would be amazing, but also it is not going to happen.
No.
So yeah, we're looking at Alabama. We're looking at who's going to be the 3.
Florida
State probably, and then UConn. Hopefully they won't. Hopefully they'll be a 10 or a 7.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they miss the 8-9. Because
we're also gonna pick up Colorado in our region.
Creighton possibly.
No, Creighton was the 5, and
I missed them.
Tennessee? BYU, St. Bonaventure, Texas, LSU, Maryland, Memphis, if they're in.
Ooh, a fourth game against Maryland.
I think the earliest we'd be able to meet them is like the Elite Eight. Is Maryland getting to the Elite Eight?
I don't think so.
No, sir!
They will get really their fueled on hate alone.
We should really rename our presenting sponsor as our corporate champion. That would be amazing. We would make so much money.
We can do that.
We could do that.
I don't know if we want to
call something a corporate champion.
Although, has the NCAA trademarked corporate champion? Probably,
yeah.
Hey, it says Michigan on the screen. I like that.
Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, Big Ten champs. Big Ten champs. Give it to us. 16, also Appalachian State. No. It's weird that we got a play-in game when we're probably not one of the top 2 seeds. They just kind of do that willy-nilly.
Yeah. So it's either going to be Mount St. Mary's or Texas Southern.
I have no opinion about any of these teams.
Yeah, that's same.
Mount St. Mary's is one of like the coolest names, like as for a school that plays basketball.
Having a logo that just says the Mount is pretty dope. Yeah.
I got to be honest. I looked up App State because I was so sure they were going to do it. So I was like ready to talk about
LSU.
Appalachian State. Here we go
in the 8-9 game. Will Wade's barely coached athletes.
I'm waiting out the nine. Please, not UConn.
Shut up, Seth.
I'm not saying a word.
Wow, they're taking forever to reveal this one for some reason.
It's okay. It's St. Bonds. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is a bullet dodge compared to UConn. That's a nine-spot difference on KenPom, and probably more than that when you consider UConn played a significant portion of the season without, like, a first-round prospect in James Bouknight.
Yes, sir.
Colorado's a brutal five, though.
Is
goodness.
It?
I mean...
They have that altitude advantage when they play at home.
That's a good point. And in the Pac-12, which is crap.
And their center looks like the dad from Family Matters.
Okay, yeah. I can't say I've watched much of them because it's just hard to watch a lot of other league college basketball this year.
I know St. Bond's a little bit.
Georgetown is at 12.
Florida State as the 5. So that's Scotty Barnes, MJ Walker.
That's a talented 4 seed. That's
yeah, and then like the parade of 7-footers that they'll put out there at center.
Maybe Colorado nips him. Who knows?
Maybe
Colorado did get an easy 12. I have no opinion on UNC Greensboro. Did not make it that far down the college basketball ladder.
BYU and Matt Harms.
Okay,
we're on a 6 seed. What a weird place for Matt Harms to be. He's European. He's in Utah. How's that going?
I mean, when you just look at him, he looks like he belongs to BYU.
Oh, Michigan State in a play-in game. There it is.
That's why I was like, this is killing me, guys. You didn't even see me laughing my ass off over here. I had to put myself on mute.
Oh, man. If we were beating them, they'd be out.
Yeah, but this is maybe funnier.
Nah,
but it's still pretty darn funny. I'm going to get these laughs off.
If
That's
you lose,
pretty funny.
If you lose a play-in game, are you really in?
More game.
Yeah, same here. Breaking a years-long streak there.
All right, so we pretty much knew Texas was going to be the 3. Shaka grew out his hair this year, which makes him a little bit more frightening than usual. But, you know, they're the 26 in KenPom. They still have some offensive issues, particularly when it comes to turnovers, as they always will. So, you know.
And they're a team that, I mean, they bounce back at the end of the season, but they hit a pretty rough patch.
Well, I got bad news.
January through February.
We're not going to play Maryland again.
Yep. Maryland catching UConn, rough.
Honestly, remember when we were in the same bracket as Wichita State and Kentucky was the 8, and everybody was like, this bracket is the bracket of death? But that was wrong, because it was the bracket of death for Wichita State, and we were the 2. So UConn as a 7 opposite Alabama is very good for this, very good for us, because UConn is a terrible second-round opponent.
Yes.
But as an Elite 8 opponent, they're great.
Yeah, sure. If you're BYU or Texas, you're looking at that and going, we might have caught a break there. Same with Michigan.
Right. So Alabama getting picked off in the second round is now much more likely. And so that's a good draw for Michigan, because you want to see UConn in the Elite 8 instead of Bama. And that's much more likely now.
I'm glad UConn went up to a 7 seed too, because the losses that they took were when Bouknight was out, and like that guy is the team. So.
Yeah, so
yeah, I mean, they're a much better team with them. So that was I'm happy with how that draw came out.
I
was getting a little scared when they were flipping over to that region, depending on how the seeding went.
So the second round matchup is number 25 in KenPom, St. Bonaventure versus number 29. LSU is a team that, you know, they have kind of a reputation of like not being real great on defense.
they play 5 out.
So, like, significantly worse than Iowa. Well, why don't we take a break, come back. We're going to look up some stuff on the potential second-round matchup and talk a little bit about Michigan's path.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
. 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Edition of MGO Radio immediately in the aftermath of the NCAA selection show. Michigan draws one of two 16 seeds in the first round, who we are promptly going to ignore.
No offense, it just doesn't happen very often.
May Virginia forgive us. And we'll talk about LSU first, since they are the 8. LSU is the number 5 offense in the country, the number 125 defense, and they play fast at both ends. They are extremely heavily dependent on their top 3 guys. Cameron Thomas, a 6'4 freshman who's mostly their point guard. Trendon Watford, who is a 6'9 sophomore, who's their center. And Javonte Smart, who plays off ball for them. Well, no, he's their point guard. Cameron Thomas is their shooting guard.
They're 5 pounds different of the same height, so understand right, what mix up.
Yeah, sorry about that. But, you know, so let's talk about Watford. Watford is 6'9", 240 pounds, does have a little stretch to him. He's a 32% three-point shooter on low volume this year, a guy who doesn't really do very much on the offensive boards.
Or the defensive boards for a big right. man.
Well, also, like, you know, LSU is 325th in defensive rebounding, so this is a major problem for their whole team. And they, I mean, they have kind of a bulky wing guy who plays a big chunk of their minutes at the 4 named Darius Days. And he's the only guy on the team other than the big 3 that really has an appreciable amount of usage. So, like, they have their big 3. They have a guy who's a little bit of a contributor. And then everybody else who plays is in that kind of, like, Vogridge zone where if they do something on offense, it's a surprise. So they only have 2 shooters. So Smart's a shooter and – this guy, Darius Days, is a shooter. They're 4. And then Thomas is a guy who's taken a bunch and hits that 32%. So he's not terrible, but he's not like a guy you really have to look out for. They rely a lot on getting to the line. They are a team that has a lot of athleticism, but it's a Will Wade team, so they're not the best organized. And they have a terrible 2-point defense. They're 240th in the country at defending 2. So this looks like, you know, a game where if Hunter Dickinson gets the ball in the post, they're probably going to double. They're giving up threes. They're 330th at giving up threes.
And so, 20th at them going in, which seems real lucky for a team that's just not that good at defense in general.
Yeah, so exactly. So their defense is not good, and they're getting that kind of luck on the three-pointers. Like, that just seems like easy pickings to me. What do you think about St. Bonaventure, Seth?
The Bonnies, they only go 6 deep. Their point guard, I think, leads the league in not coming off the court. Like, maybe he's had like 2 minutes country. Where he hasn't played. Yeah, the country. He also is one of the greatest brickers that we'll ever see. He shoots 22% on threes and has a lot of two-point jumpers. He does get to the rim, but he's kind of – he and Jaden Attaway are kind of the team. They and Jaron Holmes is the other guard, but once again, another chucker. So kind of a Minnesota playing in a different division, in a different league, but yeah, Kyle Lofton.
I mean, they are 16-4 in a pretty decent league. So, what are their assets? What are their upsides?
Osun Asununyi is the is their back to the basket center. He scores. He scores at the rim at a pretty decent clip. He's 6'10" and has a pretty solid block rate. So, I mean, they're better on defense by far, especially because of the shot blocking. But I don't know. I don't know what that looks like against Dickinson.
They excel on offensive rebounding. They don't turn the ball over. They're not great finishing inside the arc, but they've shot well from beyond three, and they have several guys who can shoot it. And then defensively, they're pretty stout inside the arc. They do block a lot of shots, but they're also – they're just like LSU. They give up a crap ton of threes. And they're only going down at about 30%. Also, they are fourth in the country in free throw defense, which does not exist. opponents are shooting 65% against them from the line. So that might, I mean, because KenPom does not, like, strip that out. So that gets into the, you know, their 17th in adjusted defensive efficiency, and the three-point and free throw luck there helps them. So this does seem like an eight, a matchup where while St. Bonaventure is much better on defense than LSU, they're not going to be as athletic. And I don't know. This feels like a pretty good draw.
Yeah, so back to LSU for a second. One thing that jumps out about their big three is they do not get to the rim. So Cameron Thomas, their freshman point guard, 15% of his shots at the rim. That's like Travis Trice level, right? Javonte Smart is at 25%. They're all like pretty solid in the mid-range. So they're all around 40% in the mid-range. So that's a MSU-like situation where they're going to be taking a bunch of mid-range jumpers, and you're like, all right, are they going to go down or are they not going to go down? And then one thing that also jumps out is Smart, who's their best three-point shooter and their highest volume three-point shooter. Under half of his threes are assisted. So this guy is a chucker, and you're just going to have to get up in him and dissuade those shots as best you can, because despite that, he's shooting 42% from deep. That is a pretty remarkable combination.
Yeah, that's some Dwayne Washington against Michigan stuff. I don't like it.
That's probably even more jacked up threes than Washington has. Washington operates in an offense. Cameron Thomas has got 20% of his threes unassisted too, which is actually a pretty high rate.
And those aren't going down nearly so much. I mean, you do not see many teams that have attempted more mid-rangers than shots at the rim. And that is what LSU has done. Because St. Bonaventure also looked somewhat mid-range heavy, but they're not that mid-range heavy.
They run a lot of pick and roll, and that pick and roll is focused on the ball handler. One of the things that also jumps out is like the number of assists that people are getting when the big three shoots inside the rim, it's about 20%. So 80% of those shots are going to be isolation or other like attacking closeouts or whatever, but their offense is really just roll the ball out and see what happens.
Tough way to make a living against Michigan.
Yeah. Well, you know, they made some strong offers and they got some athletes, but
this is going to be a very interesting 8-9 game because both these teams are just full of chuckers. I think that, I think Vaughn's just better organized, so I'm kind of expecting them to be the one that Michigan gets.
I mean, I wouldn't really call St. Bonaventure chuckers, considering their 300th in 3-point attempts at, you know, per field goal attempt. They aren't really looking to shoot 3-pointers. They're looking to attack the basket. But the problem for them is getting all the way to the basket against a Michigan team when your starting center is 6'10", 220, and plays 85% of your minutes, and your power forward is 6'5", 210. So
they have a 6'7 power forward. Days is their power forward. He's 6'7". So he's actually pretty big. So, but they
I'm talking about Bonaventure.
Yeah, oh, Bonaventure, their power forward, 6'5". And like I said, they don't come out of their top five. Like their extra guy is another guard, and that's all they play.
Yeah, no, they run 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 6'5", and a skinny 6'10". And that's a team that's going to be trying to get to the basket against Michigan. I don't see that going too great if that ends up being the matchup for them. Considering this is a team that has, they rely on balance, and they're also relying on a lot of three-point and free-throw luck on defense. I don't know. I think stylistically this is a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me about LSU a little bit is that both of those guards, Smart and Thomas, are 6'4". So we've seen opponents able to shoot over Michigan's backcourt, which is pretty small, not that athletic. And these guys are guys who specialize in jacking up shots, right? So how is Michigan going to deal with the fact that Javonte Smart is 6'4" and half of his threes aren't assisted and he shoots 42% from three?
And these are talented players too. I mean, you know, Thomas is a guy who's got some first round hype, depending on where you look. I mean, LSU has good players. So if things come together for them, I'll put it this way. I'd rather see St. Bonaventure just get through that game. Although you could see the LSU game kind of going either way in terms of their athleticism and talent gives Michigan some trouble, or like some Michigan tournament games in the past, we just see like a not very well coached team with some good talent just get blasted by a really well coached team with more talent.
And I think it's important to note that LSU is super dependent on that big three. So Cameron Thomas is playing 94% of their minutes in their last five games. Smart's playing 93%. Watford's playing 91%. So they can't afford foul trouble for any of those guys. And I think that's one reason their defense is so bad. So Smart is committing under 2 fouls per 40. Cameron Thomas is committing under 2 fouls per 40. Wofford is committing 2.8 fouls per 40. So they just can't afford to be aggressive defensively, because if any one of those guys comes out, their offense has a hard time functioning. And that might be especially relevant when Hunter Dickinson is going up against Wofford, because he's not going to be able to deal with the fact that he's got a guy who's 4 inches taller than him. And heck, I mean, Austin Davis, this is a situation where he could do some damage, because Wofford's not bigger than him and Wofford isn't going to be able to stick with him. And they have no backup five. So their Days, who's their 6'7" kind of chunky power forward, he's their biggest player other than Wofford. So any kind of foul trouble for him and LSU is in a spot of bother.
Yeah, and the thing with Wofford also is that he doesn't really block shots at all for a big man. And so you're not getting some sort of, you know, like weak side help upside to him, maybe, you know, avoiding contact at the rim. You're not getting a lot of rebounding upside there. He's a pretty poor rebounder for a center. And then you flip over to the offensive side of the ball, and he's a guy who once LSU got into conference plays, shot 47% on twos and 31% on about two threes a game, which I'm assuming Michigan will let him have. And considering his free throw percentage is right at 2/3, doesn't seem like that's a fluke that he's not a great outside shooter. So this is somebody who Michigan should be able to play drop coverage against and then also attack on the other end. And I don't know what the upside is for LSU in that matchup, because there must be a really big drop off to his backup if they're playing him as many minutes as possible for a big man. But you look at him statistically, and it looks like a matchup that Dickinson should win really decisively.
Yes, sir. Why don't we move on to a hypothetical second weekend where Michigan in the Sweet 16 will get one of Colorado, Georgetown, Florida State, or UNC Greensboro. As mentioned, Colorado does benefit from the fact that they play at elevation, so they're a team that sometimes looks better than they actually are when they're good because they have that advantage that other teams don't. And Florida State, you know, another version of a Florida State team with some really weird players. Scotty Barnes is like a 6'9 point guard who's ticketed for the top end of the maybe the middle of the first round of the NBA.
He's like a legit lottery pick because he's like at least at the college level, a dude who can guard pretty much anybody on the floor.
Yes, and he's like an ideal defensive player from the NBA perspective. And like when I say he's a 6'9 point guard, I don't mean he's a 6'9 guy pretending to play point guard. He is a top 50 assist rate. Now, he's not a shooter. He does his work near the basket. He's 30% from three on the year on only 37 attempts. And that's something that kind of stands out for Florida State in general. They're playing non-shooters, like depending on how you, they're playing two or three non-shooters at a time. And despite that, they're very, very good because they have a couple of guys shooting 44% and those guys get a large chunk of their attempts.
Yeah, no, they really, it won't surprise you to see that a Florida State team plays inside out and is rather large. They are first in the country in average height. None of this should be, Michigan has faced LSU or FSU before. They have multiple 7-foot backups. But the main thing is you just cannot let MJ Walker or Anthony Polite get shots up from beyond the arc because that's how they get you on offense. They'd be the worst turnover team in the Big Ten. They turned it over on over 20% of their possessions. They're also a horrible defensive rebounding team and a team that fouls just a ton.
I don't know how they're such a bad defensive rebounding team with this kind of personnel. Like,
it's weird because they got so much size.
They're teaching them how to play. Two of their, I think they have two foreigners at their as their backup big. So like, Balsa Koprakova is I think the starter at center. He's a 7'1" Serbian, and then Tanner Nagam is kind of their third backup. Another guy who just teaching him basketball while they go.
This is his first year that shows up statistically, and he's listed as a senior.
Must be a JUCO transfer.
Yeah. They must have just really needed depth, and they really do have a type, which is just real dang tall.
Yeah.
So the worry here is that Barnes just kind of nukes Michigan's offensive strategy, whatever it is, and that Florida State's shooters have big days, especially since they can go big in that backcourt with Walker as a 6'5" guy playing kind of off-ball point with Barnes taking the ball up. So they could be a pretty tough matchup for Michigan's backcourt. I don't know. Dickinson's going to be a real tough thing for them to handle on defense, I think.
I mean, Walker is the shortest guy who plays it all, and he's 6'5".
Raekwon Evans plays a fair amount at 6'4", but yeah, the point still stands.
Only 6'4", yeah. They also have, I don't know if he plays that much, but they have a shooter named Jack, Nathaniel Jack, so I had to point that out.
Oh, there you go. Colorado, meanwhile, I mentioned that their center looks like, what's his name? Reginald Vell Johnson. There we go.
Nice pull.
Evan Batty. So importantly for Michigan, he is not a stretch center, and he does not block shots. So if you want to drop coverage with Evan Batty, a guy like Franz Wagner might be able to just go to town. As a team, they're good at everything and great at nothing. So kind of hard to like get an off the cuff opinion of what Michigan should focus on here. But, they have McKinley Wright, who's a senior who's been around a long time, is kind of their lead dog and their point guard. Again, a guy who's like a 32% shooter from distance, not a guy who is going to exactly light you up. They do have a couple of guys who are on the KenPom leaderboards for three-point shooting. They are deep, but they don't have, a ton of, athleticism. They do have size.
So to build on that altitude home away thing you mentioned earlier, I just pulled up Torvik because, we are doing this live and on the fly. And Colorado is 11-1 at home. and has the sixth best adjusted efficiency according to Torvik in home games. Flip that over to away and neutral games, and they are 11-7 and 33rd. So that is a team that drops off pretty substantially once they are not playing at elevation.
Right, and there's sort of a guideline is like in the NCAA tournament, if you get someone who plays at elevation, that's usually a good draw, unless you're playing at elevation. And Indianapolis, unless I have been misinformed, is not at elevation.
I was not short of breathing the last time I went there. I think we're good.
Yeah, so
we're dunking on ourselves right now for football.
So Colorado is actually higher than Florida State on KenPom, but I feel like Florida State should be sorry, 15 versus incorrect. But I feel like Colorado is not a great draw as a 5 just because Florida State more likely to get through. But if Colorado is able to secure that upset, that would be good for us. And obviously the 12 or 13 coming through would be very, very good.
Yes, that would be lovely.
Do you know who the second highest team in KenPom to not make the tournament is? Number one is Duke. Number two, Penn State.
I feel like they've had a weird small sample thing going on this year because it just seems like they were expected to do okay and then just never dropped even though they weren't very good. But I don't know how, I can't look under the hood in KenPom and confirm that.
Well, part of it is that they have the toughest schedule in the country.
That will help.
So that is unfortunate for them.
And they did lose some pretty competitive games. They lost by 6 at Iowa. Their last game of the season was a 1-point loss to Wisconsin. So I guess
although you're only
looking at margin, then it comes out looking better.
So this is a weird COVID year. The top 14 strengths of schedule in the country are all Big Ten teams.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So
your greatest conference ever. Please ignore how weird this year is.
Yes, there's an asterisk for that. All right, let's take one more break, come back and kind of offer up some overall thoughts that will be something a little bit more than Michigan State is in a play-in game.
2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Block family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products,
No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage him with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way.
Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
To a special supplemental version of MGO Radio. Seth, why don't you tell us about this band?
This is the Champagne Saints, and if you recognize the first song from the first segment, that's because I had to replay the first ad break all over again.
A little bit of a miscommunication.
But
we
yeah, they're
prep time.
They're a pretty good band for and an MGO reader. So one of our lawyer friends who emailed us and said, "Hey man, I'm in a band," and always worried it's not going to be good, but this one was.
We're going to conclude our coverage with a look at the 2 and the 3 on the other side of the bracket. That is Alabama and Texas. Alabama, of course, is coached by Nate Oates, who has a very modern approach to the game. He's all threes, all at the rim. They play really fast. As soon as they get a shot that they kind of like, they put it up. And interestingly, for a team that plays so fast, they're actually really good on defense.
Yeah, it's a fascinating statistical profile to look at and also a fascinating team to watch. I've caught a couple Alabama games. There isn't really one guy to focus on at all. They've got three starters all hanging in that like 22 to 24% usage range, and their other guys not lagging too far behind, because I mean, with their style of play, you can't really be a low usage player, because or at least not a wallflower, because you better be ready to shoot. So I mean, to your point about their kind of extreme analytics driven approach, they are 3rd in average possession length. They are 17th in rate of 3-point attempts shot. And they are 345th in percent of shots they get blocked, because they are getting to the rim no matter what, dang it. And even if that means getting your shot tossed hellaciously back in your face, they're going to try. This is, as you mentioned, really strong on defense. And strong on the interior, which is pretty impressive for a team that doesn't have a great deal of size. They go kind of a skinny 6'10 at center with some 6'9 and 6'8 backups, one of whom is their starting power forward. So they're more of a small ball team. They don't have a particularly big backcourt, which should help Michigan. They obviously have a lot of dudes who can shoot, especially Javon Quinterly, Herbert Jones, and Jaden Shackelford, their top three. Shackelford is more a volume guy than a sniper, but volume counts too. And their secondary guy, John Petty, has also been a 37% shooter. So they just throw waves of shooters at you, and then their big men kind of clean up around the rim. They're a good offensive rebounding team too, I think in part because they go against a lot of unsettled defenses, and you're getting a lot of long rebounds too off of those 3-point attempts. The flip side to that is when they face tougher competition, they haven't quite been as good on defense on the interior. They have also, I feel like we're saying this about every team in this region, they at least force teams to take fewer threes than average, but they're also 10th in the country at, you know, 3-point percentage defense and 65th in free throw percentage defense. So, and they rely pretty heavily on a high turnover rate while not rebounding very well. So there are some areas where it seems like Michigan specifically with Hunter Dickinson and Brandon Johns can kind of get after him a little bit.
Oh, to the point about the fact that they never take any mid-range shots, they are dead last in the country at percentage of mid-range shots, 12.5%, and they are horrible there because who cares? Because it doesn't matter. They get to the rim on 40% of their shots, and they're not great there. They're 57%, but that's good enough. The interesting thing is that Michigan has been extremely good defending the rim this year, so they're actually 2nd to Iowa
of all teams in the percentage of close twos opponents make, and they are very, very good at preventing teams from getting there. So if they do see it, Alabama, I don't think they're going to take more shots in the mid-range, but I think the shots they get at the rim might be a lot like the shots that we've seen other teams get up, right?
Yeah, I mean, that whole being 345th and getting your shots blocked thing really does indicate that they're going to try no matter what. And if they do that against Michigan, I assume Hunter Dickinson and Franz Wagner are going to wall up quite a bit, and Brandon Johns too. And they're bigger than everybody on Bama except their starting center. So, and their starting center is 6'10", 225, which is about what Franz runs. So, I mean, the fear obviously with this team is they just are unconscious with three and getting out on the break and turning Michigan over. In which case, it might be one of those shruggy games where Michigan's on the wrong side of it. But there are a lot of ways where you can see, Michigan forcing them to be one-dimensional and maybe kind of overpowering a little bit with, Dickinson to the point where there are certainly other two seeds I would have been more fearful of.
Do you want to know what happened when Indiana played Texas?
I do. I sure do.
They shot 25% from two and 20% from three en route to 0.66 points per possession. They turned the ball over 14 times.
If we remove that, do Texas's numbers get way worse? Is Indiana like unfairly propping up Texas's entire season right here?
So here's the weird thing is that Texas's defense is worse than its offense this year, which has almost got to be a first under Shaka Smart. I mean, he grew his hair out, right? And now he looks like John Turturro. So maybe there's something there. I don't know. So they, of course, have Greg Brown. Greg Brown is the five-star who Michigan was kind of in on but never got. Greg Brown is not good, and he's not starting.
Well, he's good at certain things, and then he sure. really doesn't do a lot of other things, like at all.
So like Texas is mostly a dual post team. They start Jericho Sims at center. Kai Jones is his backup and will also play next to him for about half of his minutes. And then you have Greg Brown, who is 6'9" and probably one of the best athletes in the country, but not much of a, I mean, he is a little bit of a stretch threat. He shoots 32% out there, but if you've got a guy shooting 32% playing your four spot, who's 6'9", you're pretty much a dual post team. Kai Jones does have a little bit of stretch in him, but he's only taken 33 threes on the season. So, the challenges there will be for Michigan is like, all right, how do we match up against these guys so that they can't beat us up inside? In keeping with our Shaka Smart versus Tommy Amaker comparisons, they're 236 in turnover rate. They don't really force a lot of turnovers themselves, and they put opponents on the line a ton, which is probably pretty good for Michigan because this year they're extremely good at shooting free throws. Everybody gets threes up in a Texas game. Texas gets a bunch of threes up. They prevent threes very well. They also prevent assists. So this defense statistically looks a lot like Michigan's, except for the fact that they foul a ton.
I just want to say you're lucky the Ivy League didn't play this year. So I can't even, register a comeback on the whole Tommy Amaker thing. that's just BS. I can't. I don't have a card to play. This is unfortunate. And Texas is good. But anyway. No, I mean, that the free throw number does stand out as like the big red number on an otherwise pretty decent looking profile. You do wonder sometimes, I mean, their skill on offense is kind of concentrated within a few key players, and they're all pretty small.
Well, they're small. They're not big, but they're like Andrew Jones is 6'4". Like they don't have guys under 6 foot.
Yeah, that's true. They're not Michigan small. But I'm more worried about guys who are in like the 6'5 and up range. Like I think Eli Brooks does fine against 6'3", and I think Mike Smith has been actually doing pretty well guarding most guards of late. This is definitely a three I wouldn't mind seeing in terms of just Michigan's skill level is going to be higher than theirs, even if Michigan does not have Isaiah Livers. And even though this is a good defensive team, Michigan is a better defensive team.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan does grade out better than in a lot of categories than them. The concern for me is this is a team that has a couple of extremely large bodies to throw at Hunter Dickinson, guys who are good post defenders. They're you know, top 40 in 2-point defense. I mean, maybe they put Dickinson on the line some, and that's an advantage for Michigan. But yeah, they do feel like a team that can match up and won't have to double, and that might make things a little difficult.
Yeah, the other thing you got to worry about here is stuff like Jericho Sims has a free throw rate of 72, and you don't want Hunter Dickinson in foul trouble. So, you know, if Texas decides to try to just bang down low for the sake of getting some fouls on Dickinson early, that might actually be successful. That would be in Kai Jones has a free throw rate over 50. So, he's also aggressive.
Dickinson's been extremely good at avoiding fouls on post defense. So when he's gotten in foul trouble, it's because, I mean, there was that illegal screen that was ridiculous in the Maryland game. There was he's closing out on guys taking 18-foot jumpers, which he should not be doing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's picking up a lot of kind of ticky-tack fouls around the basket, and the fouls actually defending the post have been minimal. So also with Jericho Sims, he's shooting free throws at a 50% clip. So that tends to inflate your free throw rate when you're terrible at free throws, because there are situations where people will just put you on the line because it's the better option.
So that's true. Neither of those guys are super high usage either. So when free throws making up a large percent of each other's shots is not totally out of line there.
All right. So I think we've previewed the top half of this bracket pretty extensively. And if there are upsets, obviously any of those would work out well for Michigan. Seth, you want to start up the music here?
Sure.
Because I've talked as much as I can about all these teams on short notice. I hope you guys enjoyed it. This was an experiment, and we'll see if the reaction is good. And if it is good, we might continue doing this in the future. Especially if Seth actually gets on the same stream as us.
The bigger problem is that I'm like a second and a half behind you guys, you know, from you hearing me. So like, it's just kind of awkward every single time I want to talk.
Well, we'll work out some technical difficulties as we always do, as we sometimes do, as we occasionally do.
Work out some technical difficulties. Very professional podcast.